to order. And Sherry, can you take a roll call for us?
Yes. Arnau?
Here.
Bagai? Beanstalk? Blazik?
Here.
Brady? Caputo?
Here.
Christensen?
Yes, thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Fukami. Harris? Hero? MTS?
Here.
Lout?
Here.
Snell?
Here.
So absent is Bagai, Beanstalk, Fukami, Harris, Hero, and Brady.
Okay. But we do have quorum.
We do.
All right. Thank you, Sherry. Does anybody have any comments on agenda item 2 on the minutes from our last meeting?
Matt, I do. Just point of clarification. I just see in the in part of the minutes it says that I was absent from the last meeting, but in later it says that I joined late, so I just want to clarify that Dr. Snell was there at the last meeting.
All right. So I'm not sure how an edit to the meeting or meeting minutes works, but whomever is in charge of editing the meeting minutes, if we can make note of that.
Yasmin will take care of that, and before she has, before they're final and posted, she'll make the amended changes. So you'll ask for a motion for somebody to approve the minutes as amended.
Okay.
Unless there's more amendments. I mean, it'd still be the same motion, but.
Sure. Any other comments on the meeting minutes? Then as Ryan stated, I'll make a motion that we accept the meeting minutes as amended.
I second it.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Motion passes. Thank you. All right, let's move on to agenda item 3. Ryan, do you want to give us an update on what's happened since our last meeting, and maybe also an update on any edits that have been added to the paperwork that the staff put together?
Yeah, and I think Dr. Brady just joined for Yasmin for you. So we now have a quorum plus one. So, the board, there was some discussion about the anesthesia and sedation rules that were written, missing some portions that this committee worked tirelessly to try to make changes to. And so some of the things were, and honestly, I don't even know how it happened, but for whatever reason, what was filed with the Secretary of State was not the most accurate. It was the most current, but apparently not the most accurate, because there should have been some changes after the first oral proceeding, and those did not get included. So we, instead of rushing to GIRC and then having to go through this whole process again, you have to open a rulemaking package. It's just easier to move forward with the current rule package that we had. And so the board sought to make those changes. They did make the changes that should have already been changed. We will refile. I'm going to need staff's help on this, but we have filed with the Secretary of State's office, and we have a oral proceeding. It's a Monday. Help me out, Yasmin or Christina. I don't have my calendar in front of me, but it's in May. Because we can't do it before a certain time, but we picked the first date available. And I think it's like May 18th or something like that. So as they look up that confirmation on that date, what will happen now is there will be a new oral proceeding. This is actually now the third oral proceeding. And then it will go back before the board if there's oral comments, either written in advance and provided ahead of time or given during that. And then it would go to GIRC after that. If there's no comments at the oral proceeding, it's slated to go directly to GIRC to hopefully finish this thing up. So with those dates in mind, it'll be sometime at the mid-May is the oral proceeding. The first available board meeting would be June. if there was a need for the board. If there's not a need for the board meeting, it could go to GIRC as early as the end of June or July. So hopefully that helps. And I don't know if that answers your question. Looks like Yasmin's going to answer mine, though.
Yes, the oral proceeding is scheduled for May 14th.
May 14th. Thank you, Yasmin.
All right. And do we have a time set for that meeting yet?
Yes, it is at 10 a.m. and it will be in virtual format. The meeting link will be posted on the board website.
All right. Thank you.
And the draft rules will be also on the website for everybody to review as well. We can send those out. In fact, Yasmin, maybe make a note that we should send the current rules as they currently are with the Secretary of State to this group of people.
For clarification, once we receive the rule format that gets posted on the register, I can send it. But the ones that we submitted to the Secretary of State is in your packet for today's meeting.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Go ahead, Randy.
So I'm sorry just to be so confused here, but I just want to make sure I understand. We submitted some rules that should have been submitted properly, and they were, but somehow they didn't do it correctly. And now we're going to wait until May to hear how they respond to the rules we originally submitted. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah. So the rule process is literally one of the most cumbersome, burdensome processes in all of government. And the same people that oversee the rule process claim that regulation is burdensome. So it's kind of an irony that we live within the same confounds that they believe is nutty. So there are rules that we filed with the Secretary of State, and they were accepted. And there was parts of the rules, and I think it was Dr. Arnall that said that they were not part of the register. I think it was Dr. Arnall and Dr. Fukami both said that there was something that was not part of the register. And so the rules that were submitted are not, in fact, the rules that should have been, the rules that were on the register were not, in fact, the rules that should have been on the register. So we got the corrections made. It took a minute to get that done because of Christmas and the holidays around Christmas. And so now the reason why you have to delay it is because the Secretary of State will take a period of time, and you have to have a delay before you have an oral proceeding for the rules to be posted to the website. And it's like 35 days, but they're not posting it the minute you give it to them. So they tell you dates of when you can have your oral proceeding no sooner than whatever date. And that's the date Yasmin provided. So we've picked the first date available.
Wow. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anthony.
I just think to piggyback on what Randy said, in light of the rules package that was now submitted correctly, that's not the package that we're looking at currently. Is that correct?
That's exactly where I was going with that, Anthony. I was going the same place. I'm like, let me just make sure we're doing the right thing here, you know?
The point being is, what's the
point of me?
Why review something that's not an accurate document to begin with?
So I think for the most part, from my perspective, and I'll just speak from my own perspective, the rules as they were written in the register with the Secretary of State were a complete set of rules, but there was things that were missing, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was like one of the drugs that is used for sedation or anesthesia, there was like, maybe it was an anticonvulsant or something of that nature that was not in it. And you guys have said, no, this has to be in it. That's one of the things that's in it. So they were smaller things. But yeah, I mean, to your point, we don't have to meet, but I think to get the foundation of what this committee is trying to desire to accomplish, I think it's helpful to still work to that end. But I hate meetings almost as much as anybody else, and I definitely don't want to meet if there's no need to meet. But I think what we provided as far as the application packet and the evaluation materials does accomplish what it is that this committee was trying to get at. And if we have to wait till the final minutes to make certain that we cross-reference and make certain that those things are on the application, that'll be a simple change.
So, okay, go ahead, Anthony.
So I guess, and the reason why I say it this way is, the rules that I read over that are in our packet has information in there that doesn't seem reflective of what we previously discussed. And from my perspective, Ryan, it's more substantive than a word here, a word there. And so I'm just curious if those changes or those directions ever were made it to the final set of rules. And at the end of the day, I know this has been confusing and there's been a lot of moving parts to it, but I just have some concerns of what I'm currently reading based on what we have discussed in the past. Also, I was looking at some of the comments that were made from previous gatherings, not even just this committee, but when we've had a couple of open meetings and discussions and comment period, that those don't seem like they were reflected accurately either. And so I didn't want to dive down into the weeds and that stuff if it's in those new rules. But then if it's not, then I think that becomes its own challenge too. So I don't know how you want to handle that, Matt.
So I can speak to what was missing, and maybe Anthony, you and I can go through what you think is different on this draft. I know I probably read these drafts. I may have read these drafts more than any human on earth except for the board staff. And I do keep track of how they change, so maybe I can help you find out where things have been missed and try and sort that out. But just going off memory from the things that were missing that got put back in that Ryan was referring to was what got sent was missing a neuromuscular blocker. It was missing how to handle an applicant who had done a residency more than 2 years prior to showing up in the state. And it had the word pretracheal misspelled. Then there was a fourth, but it was also a grammatical error. There was four changes, but really the one that was critical was that the rules were completely had a void in what to do to handle an applicant who had completed residency more than 2 years prior. So though it was those four things that got fixed and sent back for an oral proceedings. But why don't you and I sit down and go through and just make sure that it is actually the accurate draft?
That's fine. I mean, so if that's the case, I mean, there's not a lot I would have to say for today. One thing I would like to pose to the committee at this time and put it up there for consideration as we move forward. And part of it's in relationship to what we're trying to do right now. And then part of it is what happens after this committee is terminated. So I'm wondering if the committee sees merit in identifying one or two, I don't think it should be more than that, I don't think it needs to be, people to serve in some consultant capacity to the board to facilitate how the application for the different permits gets put together. something I've always found, and I know others have found it too, is that the applications that dentists complete for the different permits that they are applying for sometimes contain information that is either incorrect or misleading or not complete. And I think if we had a dentist actually working with staff who's knowledgeable of the permit levels and that sort of thing, that can, I think, be really helpful. And so that would be one thing I'd love to kind of get some feedback or thoughts on, whether people feel one way or another about that. And then the other issue is, in discussing our thoughts and our position and then translating it into rule about the responsibility of a dentist who's going to obtain a 1304 and work with a QAP, I think it merits having an identified person. And again, I think that person should be someone who is a licensee and a permit holder, and most likely someone who is also an evaluator who understands the evaluation process at all permit levels, that effectively communicates directly with any dentist applying for a 1304 and ensuring that they understand their responsibilities when working with a QAP. And the listing in the 1304 that identifies what a dentist is going to attest to really could serve as a springboard for a script that could be created. The reason why I think this is important for those of you who have involvement with the board currently, you'll appreciate this. If you don't, you may not. But one of the things that I have observed that happens with almost absolute certainty is the dentist who is either a permit holder or a 1304 permit holder. So that's another thing to kind of flesh out as well. If they go in front of the board and have to address an adverse event that involves sedation or anesthesia with, at present, a CRNA or a physician, the common response to the board is, I have no responsibility for that. I was not involved with that part of the procedure, and therefore I can't be held accountable. And obviously that's why we changed the rules that will be going into effect to change that. But I think, at least initially, it's going to merit that direct communication with those permit holders to say, hey, you need to understand you do have a level of responsibility here, and these are those responsibilities. So, again, the second proposition to this committee is the idea of identifying at least one, I would say maybe two, but I think one could do it, person as a consultant to satisfy that type of thing. Again, worthy of discussion to see how people feel one way or the other.
So, this is Christensen. Dr. Caputo, I would nominate you.
I appreciate that. I'm obviously happy to do it, either things, but I'm also sensitive and thoughtful of others who like to be involved. But I just like to know, does that have merit, do folks think?
Dr. Caputo, this is Seamus, and I just want to just kind of point something out here. So, you know, we've had a lot of suggestions regarding consulting on these evals. Right now, there's considerable legal issues involving the board being the LPC evaluator and technically their regulator. So I'm not saying that's a bad idea. I'm just saying we are looking into that right now.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and I think it's important, obviously, to go through the board, but I think if we made a recommendation to pursue something at that level, Seamus, at least they know that. I guess the idea is we want to ensure that folks that are holding these permits understand what their responsibilities are and not say, oh, I just didn't know or I don't have any responsibility. So anyways, I completely understand what you're saying, though, and I appreciate that.
All right. Jason, you had your hand up first, I believe.
Yeah, I'll be quick. I agree with what Anthony is saying. There's a little confusion on my part as if even within these application process, since the Senate board or the Senate passed that everyone that's not a dentist have to have their own permit, like dental permit or permit outside of the operating room. If on that application, if they can ask the question that that's been verified by the dentist, whether it's the dentist anesthesiologist or whomever, you know, the nursing board or the physician board. But I think that kind of goes to your point, Anthony, about making sure that our dentist knows what they're involved in, what they're getting, getting in with their QAP.
So, Seamus, is to Jason's point, is that something that we can, add to, I mean, do we have the leeway to add something like that to the application?
Before I speak, and thanks, Dr. Arnell, before I speak, I'd ask board staff, because right now I currently, my understanding is that those requirements are laid out in the documents that are received before the evaluation by the person being evaluated. But I'll let staff talk to that. And if that's not true, then maybe that's, you know, where that's a good place for us to insert at least some requirements they should have to meet and know what they're expected of them.
I think what Jason was getting at is that there should be some requirement that the dentist actually verifies that the person coming in does have a permit issued by their board. Is that correct, Jason?
Yes, that's correct.
And my understanding, that's part of the 1304 permit, right? That's the whole premise of it, is that you are bringing somebody else in. And I get the issue with, you know, they need to understand they're responsible, and exactly what they're responsible for and whether they actually went through those, you know, steps to ensure that. That's what we're looking at right now. And if that's something you're interested in, well, you know, that's a reasonable thing to talk about. But right now, you know, there is this sentiment from the committee, from the IC committee, you know, as well, and the board, that 1304 permits holders are responsible to a certain extent for those people they bring in. Where that responsibility lies is kind of right now the gray area, if that makes sense. And I know that's what you're pointing to, but that is where we're having an issue. What are those basic requirements that they should be doing?
Can we maybe investigate that between now and our next meeting? And maybe, Ryan, can we put that on our agenda for our next meeting to just discuss what was found out? It may already be essentially written into the language that the person coming in must have their, and it is written in 1602, right, that they must have a permit from their board. But maybe we can just investigate between now and our next meeting how we actually put that language into the evaluation, and then we can talk about it at our next one. Do you think?
I'm happy to do whatever. There's just none of this has been smooth from my perspective. I think that most everybody here would agree, if you haven't already, that this whole process has taken far longer than I ever dreamed it would take.
Yeah.
And so we kind of delayed the rest of the process, including the 1304 application, partly because the fact that we don't even know what the final draft was. We knew this back, I think, before this committee even met, that there was some concern that there was some things missing. The whole process is just a nightmare when you deal with just so many moving parts and other entities like GIRC, the board, Secretary of State, the governor's office, the Senate, you know, all these people get involved, and it becomes just a train wreck of just mountainous proportions. So I know this is a long answer to get to the question of, yes, we can do whatever, but if we're worried about the final draft of the rules, there's still going to be another oral proceeding, and maybe we're not even looking at the same final draft. I will say that there are some that are probably still concerned that there's things that are not in there that you thought should be in there. But from my perspective, what's in the materials that are in your packet today are the way the rules that were agreed upon. as a body, maybe not so much as an individual. And so that is what I would say. If you don't agree with those, then that's the opportunity at the oral proceeding, which would just delay it. But there's other avenues we can cover on that at a later date. But I'm happy to talk to Dr. Caputo to see where he thinks that could be inserted between now and the next meeting.
And it may be, I mean, what we're talking about is not the rule itself, right? We're talking about the
evaluation. I'm aware. It's in the application and the evaluation process, not the rule itself.
Yeah. And it may be that we can find a way using the language as it's being submitted to support that requirement that it be confirmed that the QAP has a permit issued by their board. Right. I guess that's what I'm suggesting we do is if we take the language as it's written and just confirm that it allows us to require that we check that they actually do have a permit.
Dr. Knopf.
Yes, go ahead.
I was just going to say in 1304D3, it's already written in rule that that's what the 1304 permit holder has to do.
Okay.
So the language is there. It says the QAP is the 1304 permit holder has to sign an affidavit stating that, quote, the QAP is registered by their licensing board to provide anesthesia in the dental office or dental clinic in Arizona. So it's already written in rule. We could put it on a form with a checkbox that they have verified that as part of the evaluation.
All right. Then I think it's pretty clear that that's what people want. I suggest that we just do it then, huh? Randy, you have your hand up. Dr. Blazek? No.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I had my hand up for a while, but I wanted us to get back to the agenda, kind of like I was going to say. I think all these points are great, but I think we're here today for, you know, one particular reason, and that's the forms and stuff. So I would love us to digress back to the agenda, maybe.
I agree, but the thing that we are talking about is actually the form, right? Dr. Brady is asking if the form that has been sent out, if we can add a requirement on the form that the QAP is confirmed to have a permit. Is that correct, Jason?
Yeah, that's correct. It seems like it's been answered at this point.
Okay.
My mistake. Thank you.
But to your point, Randy, let's move on.
You just
on.
Have to make sure the language is correct, right?
Yes, I think we have to make sure the language is correct, and because
it's a registration, not a permit. That's all.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and we do have to make sure that what we're doing, as far as this committee is concerned, is based off of what's written in the rule that has been sent out.
Yeah, if you just take to answer Dr. Crudo's, if you just take 1304D3, it uses the word register. It's all there. You could take it verbatim and add it to the form.
Cool.
Yeah, sure.
So, Ryan, maybe we can look at just making sure that shows up on the form correctly based on the language in the rule. All right. Let's move on. Ryan, would you like to walk us through? I noticed that the evaluation forms that you put in the packet had some updates. Do you want to walk us through those?
Yeah, I'll do the best I can, attending from the WRDE. But so the documents that are in front of you aren't, I'll say, mostly final, only because they're in an Adobe format that's a fillable format, but ultimately it would be kind of like a DocuSign document, which more people are familiar with DocuSign than they are Adobe Sign, but they're one and the same. So some of the things that you'll see, there's going to be drop-down menus for some of the stuff that you cannot do in a PDF format that you guys would, that I could translate in a PDF document. So from my take, and this is only in regard to the 1301 permit application and the renewal, the evaluation, and it should be ordered exactly the way you guys wanted it. I think it was Dr. Caputo that talked about having the, I can't remember what it's called, but it's Title 41, Seamus. Well, Small Business Bill of Rights. That's first. When you go in as an evaluator, you wanted to be able to show them that, sign off, and move about the rest of the evaluation. And then the application and the rule is the same document where it's combined, whether you're applying by renewal or application, and you, or, initial application, and it's a radio button. You basically check a box. So all of, some of the kind of the woven in parts to it that will make it more user friendly can't be done in a PDF form, but quite a few of them in there with the yes and no check boxes or the radio buttons. And again, this is only the 1301. It takes a lot of time to go through each one, but we didn't want to spend too much effort doing each one until there was some sort of finality on the one. And so to not go backwards, but the comment that we had talked about, Dr. Brady, about the comment about the co-op, that is part of the 1304, and we haven't even started creating that, but it certainly will be in there. Everything is in there based on the black and white of the statutes and rules. So with that, I would just answer any questions that you guys have based on what's in front of you. If something is now missing because of the current rules that are in front of you, now would be the time to make that change. Otherwise, 1302.3 will probably be built off of the 1301, and then 1304 will be a little bit different just because of the nature of that permit.
All right. Thank you, Ryan. Anthony, you have your hand up.
Yeah, the only thing I would say to this, and it kind of is in line with what we were just talking about adding something on the evaluation form. The way the rules read currently, it's very simple. It just says that a 1301, 1302, 1303 permit holder can work with a co-op without any further need or requirement. And I think that's fine, but I would like to see that if a 1301, 1302, 1303 permit holder is going to be working with a co-op, that should be captured somewhere. Because I think it's important that once that 1301, 1302, 1303 permit holder indicates they want to work with a co-op, they should see the same listing of requirements and attestation that the 1304 permit holder would otherwise put. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, but I do believe that that falls out of the purview of this committee, because that would require a change to rule. But remember, Anthony,
I don't think the
1304 is intended for not to be used for those who have sedation and anesthesia permits issued right by the board.
But all we would be acknowledging is their responsibilities when working with the CLAP. I don't think that's outside of rule or statute.
No, that's already written into each section, but that's the attestation that they make when they receive their permit.
I don't think it says anything about the co-op and the attestation. If it does, then that's great.
Yeah, let's go through it later. I think the point was not to have 1301, 1302, and 1303 permit holders who have already made the attestation have to do the 1304 registration.
Right. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that a 1301 or 1302 or 1303 permit holder is signing an attestation for themselves when they do sedation. But the rule reads that they can work with the CLAP without any further contact or notification to the board. I don't have a problem with that either. But again, what we're seeing at the board level is these folks come in, they've had an adverse outcome with the CLAP, and they're like, it has nothing to do with me. I had no responsibility. And I think if in their application, just like if you were to indicate on your application you were to get a mobile permit, as an example, if you indicate on your application that you will work with the CLAP, or if there's a statement on the attestation that says if you work with the CLAP, you must contact the board, that mere notification, all it does is generate an attestation to that permit holder acknowledging what the 1304 permit holder acknowledges. I don't think that's outside of statute or rule.
So, Dr. Caputo, this is Ryan. So, for clarification, are you saying that on the 1301, 2, and 3 applications, we also have a similar question that you would be, that I was saying would be on the 1304?
I think just like we ask if they're going to get a mobile permit, we ask if they're going to work with a CLAP.
Okay.
And then if they say yes to that, then all they have to do is submit another form that attests that they will do those things when a CLAP is in their office. My concern is they look at the permit being for them, which it is, right? But they don't look at it being any responsibility of theirs when they work with a CLAP. And I think that's where the challenge becomes. So I'm wondering if this would be a way around that. That's all I'm saying.
Heath, do you have comments about that?
Yeah, two comments. One, I disagree. I believe I'm more in with Dr. Arnell. I think that is outside of what's written in rule. The example of a mobile permit, you know, marking the box, that's in rule. That's why it's there on the forms, the evaluation forms, because it's a thing in rule. There's nothing in 1301, 02, 03 in rule that says that anything would have to be attested to in order to bring a CLAP in. In fact, it's just the opposite when you look at the 1304 verbiage. So I think that is outside of rule. But beyond that, Ryan had asked if there's anything in this document that's not in line with the current rules. One of the things that I see is in under the affidavits on page 3, that neuromuscular blocker did not get added to the list of emergency drugs. It was added in rule, as a proposed rule, but on our forms, I don't see it on that list there.
Where are you looking? You said page 3 of the document.
Page 3 of the application.
Okay.
Is that all it's called, or is it a specific name?
Neuromuscular blocker is what's in rule, so I would copy that. That'd be my recommendation.
It was convenient last time when there was a share screen to see the documents. Is that possible?
I'm seeing it on page 1. Is that – maybe I'm wrong, but
– page 1 is the general anesthesia deep sedation application renewal. It says licensee identification, has some different things. Page 2 starts off with secondary places of practice.
Oh, okay.
Page 3 says affidavits, and number 1 says the following emergency drugs.
Yep. Okay, I see that. Yeah, that is missing there. So, Ryan.
And committee, this is Seamus, if you would just indulge me for a second. And if not, you guys can continue on. You can ignore me. It's fine.
I'm sorry, you had something to say?
Yeah. So with regard to what I heard before was before the second issue, but the first issue was potentially requiring, sounds like what I heard was a standing QAP document that would identify, you know, the QAPs that you work with. I'm not sure. I don't see that requirement in the rule. So again, that's probably something that may need a rule requirement, since everything we're doing is pretty based on what comes strictly out of the rule. So while I do find that it's required to put the QAP's name down whenever that service is provided, I'm just not sure if you would be allowed to require an affidavit as a standing document with any QAPs that may be used. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think we'll need to review afterwards, but I do agree. I think it's not in rule that an affidavit should be done for a QAP if they already have a permit. Okay. Ryan, do you see where Heath is talking about where we need to add the neuromuscular blocker?
Yeah.
On the form? Okay.
Yeah. I think, isn't it on two spots? Thank you. Isn't it in two spots? Like one on the application, but also on the evaluation form too, right?
Yes, it is on the evaluation as well. That's page, maybe that's where the mess up was. It was under the, I was referring to the application, and Dr. Arnall might have been looking at the evaluation form. Yeah,
I think that's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
So what you saw was on page 3. What I saw was on page essentially 1 after, it was page 1 of the evaluation form.
Of the evaluation form, yes, yeah. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, so both locations there, neuromuscular blocker.
But, Ryan, just as you're creating the other ones, well, just note that that's only for 1301. So that is one difference between the 02 and the 03 compared to the 01 forms.
Okay, yeah, I appreciate that. I wouldn't even have thought to ask the question, so I think, thank you.
Does anyone else see anything else in these documents that needs to be adjusted? In the evaluation or application documents? So, Ryan, I think, you know, outside of major changes in rule, I think we're close enough now that we can start, you know, we can look at a 1302, 1303, and 1304 draft and start working on those.
Okay.
Maybe Heath, after your comment, if the other committee members can voice whether they think that's a good idea or not. Go ahead, Heath.
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Nall. One other thing, this was just in the instructions document, which was the first page in our document after the rules. It just looks like check boxes. It says instructions, anesthesia, sedation, permit application, blah, blah, blah. About halfway down, it says, in addition, for non-dentist anesthesiologists, you should plan and prepare for the subsequent evaluation by following this checklist. Would it be appropriate, instead of non-dentist anesthesiologists, which to me is very exclusive, only two anesthesiologists, to include non-dentist QAPs or something that would include CRNAs in that reference?
You're talking about the forms that we're looking at for, see, these forms only, none of these forms apply to CRNAs anyway.
So help me then understand on, it's the very first page after the rules in our document.
Okay, and what you're looking at the check boxes?
Yeah, halfway down it says, so this is instructions for the, I think, to the individual who's seeking a permit, right? These are instructions for them, help them through this process.
Yeah.
And halfway down it says, basically, if you're trying to get a permit for non-dentist anesthesiologists to come in and work with you, should it be better written non-dentist QAPs, because it's excluding if they're thinking about having a CRNA come in.
No, what we're looking at here is the everything below that is for a site evaluation, right? So the dentist anesthesiologist doesn't have a site evaluation. So this is for oral surgeons, in essence, who are applying for a 1301 permit. And in rule, the dentist anesthesiologist doesn't have a site evaluation, whereas the oral surgeon does. And so the checklist below is for 1301 permit applicants who have a site evaluation. Correct?
I thought this was just a general instruction for any individual who's seeking a permit.
It is, but the requirements.
For the 1301, though.
Yeah, this is for 1301.
Okay.
Yeah, for 1301, there's the site evaluation requirements are different for someone who did a 3-year anesthesia residency versus someone who did not. So
what's the term? Why have non-dentist anesthesiologists in there? I don't get that term then.
I'm not sure. I mean, what do you guys think? Is there a much better term?
Yasmin, can you scroll to that section? It's further down.
Yes, the QAP.
Because when I understand what you're saying, that this is for dentists who are not dental anesthesiologists. But when I first read that at first glance, I think of a individual who's not a dentist that is an anesthesiologist, meaning an MD anesthesiologist.
Oh, see, these forms don't apply to any of them anyway. This is a form to get a dentist ready for their permit, right? It's a checklist to help them get ready for their permit.
So if this is for only 1301, and 1301 is really virtually only for dental anesthesiologists and oral surgeons.
Oral surgeons.
In addition.
Maybe just a for oral surgeons.
For oral surgeons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Or you could keep it simple and just cite the rule.
I may be able to help here, guys. Again, I think we've had this conversation a lot. The dental board doesn't have authority over any anesthesiologist other than one licensed by this board to perform dentistry or dental anesthesiology. So I get the hang up, but again, if it makes you feel any better, you don't have authority over them. So you don't necessarily have to worry about that.
Yes, we understand that, and I think that's everything that we're talking about applies to dentists. This section of the checklist is not trying to be applied to people who are not dentists. But I think was it Anthony? Did you just say to cite the section of rule?
Yeah, because there's a section in there that says for dentists to meet or satisfy subsection 2, don't have to meet this or don't have to adhere to this, something like that.
Yeah, so maybe instead of
that
saying
way you're not identifying the type of practitioner, you're just saying this is what it says in rule.
Yeah, maybe what you're saying is instead of it identifying non-dentist anesthesiologists, you just say if section whatever it is, section XYZ applies to you, please disregard the checklist below.
Yeah, or exactly.
Something like
correct.
That.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
So
yeah, I mean,
I'll do whatever you guys decide. The one thing that is problematic for me, and I heard George W. Bush once say this, that you can't fix stupid. And I'm not trying to be disparaging to anybody that's reading these documents, but if you're pointing somebody outside of the document that they're looking at, then you're basically counting on them to go look. They're not going to go look at see what that reference says. They're going to call, or we need to spell it out. And that's why it's written the way it is. If we don't like the way it's written or we don't think instructions are needed, then I'm happy to get rid of it. But I think you have to simplify it. Otherwise, all we do is create work for the staff. And it's just that simple.
So maybe we can, by what you just said, Ryan, maybe we can get the best of both worlds and just take that phrase in rule that says if you completed a COTA accredited residency in dental anesthesiology, please disregard the rest of the checkboxes below. that way, in essence, it still quotes what's in rule and it makes it more clear. Do you think?
Yeah, it's probably the simplest way to do it. So we're not recreating a new vernacular for other people to try to figure out. So yeah, let's just do it that way.
Okay. All right. That was a good catch, Heath. Anybody else see anything that needs some attention? I read through it and I thought, I mean, this is a pretty impressive undertaking to gather all these parts and pieces into a document for getting a license or a permit and a document for taking for having an exam. I think it's pretty good. I think we're just about there.
That's good to hear. This will probably be done before the rules.
Yeah, I imagine it will. Okay, anybody else notice anything as they read through? Okay, then what does everyone think about moving on to seeing a draft of 1302 and 1303 at least, and maybe starting into 1304? Go ahead, Heath.
I would fully support that. I think if there's minor errors that we're overlooking, they're minor enough to where if the board staff, Ryan, could work on 1302 and 03 and bring those forward, and then we have another chance to finalize everything, I think it's at that point where we do that. And thanks to board staff for putting all this together. I agree, Dr. Now, this is a daunting undertaking, and they've done a phenomenal job, so thank you.
Yeah.
I have a quick question. This is for Dr. Arnell, or I guess for anybody. When we create them, as opposed to like having multiple meetings to finish them up, it might be a good idea once they're drafted to run them through like somebody that either you appoint or you volunteer on your own. And then that way, when it gets to the final draft, we're not talking about neuromuscular blocker because you know, one of you guys knows it far better than I do. But if we still have those little tiny things, that's still fine. But maybe another pair of eyes that is a dentist would be better than staff.
Sure. I think that's a great idea. Maybe maybe we can break up into the subcommittees that we kind of assigned before. And when you have a draft, send it out and we can all review it.
Okay.
What does everybody think? What do the other committee members think of that?
I think that's a good idea.
All right. Then let's
why not get the draft and actually give it to someone who wasn't even on the committee? Like maybe an evaluator who has not been part of this committee.
Sure. I mean, can we do that, Ryan? Is there any reason why we couldn't do that?
Yeah, I think it's best if you – I mean, it's good to have somebody that – I get the reason why Dr. Blazek made the recommendation because fresh eyes is always a good pair of eyes, but they're not on the committee, and ultimately that would be problematic. I'd let Seamus speak on that, but I think it has to stay within the committee. The recommendation would come from the committee, but I don't know if we can use fresh pair of eyes. I mean, then you're like having an advisory person and giving information to an advisory committee who's then giving a recommendation to a board. But Seamus.
I withdraw the recommendation.
I think you guys have done an excellent job. My head's spinning half the time just trying to keep up with you. So if you'd like to just provide something for staff, I'd be happy to go through it too. That way I'm not always the wet blanket and you might know ahead of time, you know, any concerns I have. At this point, I doubt that I'll have any, but yeah, I'd be happy to do that for you. And I do agree with Ryan, be better to keep it within the committee. Thank you.
All right. I mean, we get ourselves confused sometimes and we're the ones that wrote it or not wrote it, but edited it. Okay. All right. Does anybody else have anything that they would like to discuss regarding the permitting and evaluation process before we move on? Okay, then I'll make a motion that we move on to agenda item 5, the proposed committee meeting dates. Our next one is set for April 18th. If everyone wants to look and see if we have a good chance of having quorum on the 18th. That is Good Friday.
That's what I was going to.
Yeah, I will likely be here. Yeah, I'm out.
I'll be out for sure on that day. Maybe we can take a look. I know to have a meeting like this, Ryan, you have to coordinate a lot of staff members. Do you want to look at possible dates and maybe have board staff email those out for the next committee meeting? And I'll personally make a promise to actually read my emails. I felt bad the board staff had to track me down because I wasn't reading my emails.
Yeah, I think we're just going to probably, we'll just look further out. And if it's late in the day, I think that Fridays is what people mostly said works for them because of your schedule. So maybe we'll just pick I think Yasmin even picked the 18th and not, Yasmin's got her hand raised. I think she's probably got better input than I would at this point.
Go ahead, Yasmin.
Thank you. Yes, we do have limited availability on Fridays for the month of April. That's why I proposed the 18th. The April 11th, well, let me start with the first Friday of April. April 4th is next week. That would probably be too soon for everyone and for staff to start working on those changes. April 11th is a board meeting date. April 18th is the proposed date, or we could push it for April 25th. That would be the only other option for that month.
Looks to me like I can do April 25th. What does that day look like for all the committee members?
We can send Dr. Arnault, we can send a quick Google form. If people respond to the Google form, we can get this information pretty quickly and find out if we can do it at April 25th. But if we don't get responses, it makes it challenging. And not everybody's here today. So we'll try to do that. And if it doesn't work, we'll just reschedule for another date.
Okay. That sounds great. All right. Any final comments before we adjourn? Heath, you have your hand up.
Sorry, that was just for the Good Friday voting to change it. Yeah.
Thanks. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. We'll look forward to our next meeting and reviewing those next sets of paperwork for 1302-3 and possibly 4. And thank you, board staff, very much for all the work you put into it. And we'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting.